Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi guys, quick one before we get into the episode. This episode is sponsored by Zencastr, which is the production suite that I've used from the very beginning of this podcast. And if you're interested in starting your own podcast, hang around at the end of the episode for our 30% discount referral code. Thanks.
So our podcast is called Right and Wrong.
Are these your notes? These are your notes about what we're going to say?
Anything. Nailed it. Just a short answer.
So how many novels did you not finish?
Oh my God, so many.
It was perfect. What's she talking about? This is nonsense.
Ooh, a spicy question. I love it.
This is it, guys. The big secret to getting published is you have to write a good book. You better hear first. Hello, and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. I'm Jamie, and today I'm joined by someone, once again, who works on both sides of the publishing curtain. It's author and publishing manager, Beth Lewis. Hi.
Welcome Hi. To the show. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, there's a lot I want to get into here because you have a really good sort of view of the industry from where you're positioned. But let's start with your work, your writing and your books. Your last release, The Origins of Iris, is that right, last year?
That's right, yeah.
And before that, Bitter Sun and The Wolf Road. So three books out.
Yeah, that's right.
Are they all literary thrillers?
Yes, I think that is the label they have been given. But I think it's because they are a little bit hard to categorize. Okay. The Wolf Road was my debut, and it is essentially a post-apocalyptic Western.
Yeah.
And about a serial killer, a girl raised by a serial killer in this, you know, horrible, difficult world to live in. And it's all about her. So
nice and cheery.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Bitter Sun then is a sort of Stand By Me, more straight, I suppose, literary thriller of four kids in the 70s in the Midwest. They find a body in their sort of where they play, you know, and they set about trying to solve this murder because nobody else seems to care. And, you know, bad things happen as they do.
Yes.
And then The Origins of Iris, which came out in hardback last year and in paperback a couple of weeks ago in end of May. That one is about a woman who flees her abusive wife, and she escapes into the wilderness, kind of holes up in a cabin in the Catskills, and meets another version of herself who has made different choices in life, but has still ended up in that same place, and they kind of have to figure out what's going on. So that's a bit more of a speculative edge to it. So they're all a little bit different,
yeah.
Which my publishers love.
Really, so. That's interesting, because I would have thought publishers would like their authors to sort of stay on brand.
Oh yeah, they do. They do. I was being very sarcastic in that point.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I gotcha, gotcha. But I mean, the writing style is similar throughout.
Yes,
and
yes.
The weight of it, I would say, is kind of, they're all quite serious.
Yeah, yeah, I would say so. They're all written in first person. They're all quite tight stories. They focus very much on character and voice, and they're all very distinctive in their voice. But I think I think you could probably tell if that they're written by me.
Right.
If
yeah.
That makes
if
sense.
You've read you know? One, you read the next
yeah,
one.
Yeah. You'd hope
like,
so.
Oh, this is very much Beth Lewis.
That's the plan. Yeah. That
well, that's great. That's what you want though, right? To have that distinctive voice and writing style.
Absolutely.
Anything. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it's funny. I noticed that you said that's what they have been labeled, literary thrillers. So when you were writing them, you didn't in your mind think, oh, I'm writing literary thrillers?
I don't think I've ever written a thriller because okay. I think thrillers are a very particular genre. Mm-hmm. They are usually quite fast paced. They've got similar beats. They often have a chase of some description, and yes, they hit the same story points, which is what readers expect and what readers love. But my books are quite slow burns. You know, okay, they're dark and they're moody, and they're about the characters, really. They're not about sort of fast-paced plots. They're right, about the characters finding themselves and coming of age and figuring out what's going on in their lives and coming to terms with it. So it's, yeah, I think yeah, they like putting a thriller name on it, because, you know, it, you could say there are elements of thriller in this, in, mm-hmm, but I would not necessarily agree with that.
Right. Yeah, yeah. More like a sort of Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah. The Wolf Road was compared to The Road quite a lot, and Blood Meridian as well. Wow. So it's,
you've got to be happy with that though, right?
It was pretty cool, I'm not gonna lie. Do you know what though? I never read any Cormac McCarthy until after I'd written that book, because people were saying, so
that's kind of great though, that yeah, you haven't read them before. And then
most of the times when my books get compared to other books, I'm like, I've never read that. So,
and is there a part of you that's like, oh my god, is it going to be exactly the same?
Yes, completely. I was really scared, because everyone with Wolf Road in particular, people were comparing it to True Grit,
wow,
as well. So it was like True Grit meets The Road or Blood Meridian or something like that. I'm like, never read them, never seen the movies. Cool. I better go and do that then.
Those, I mean, if your, you know, debut novel comes out and those are the comparisons that you're getting, that is high praise, I would
say. It was very cool. It was a very fun time.
And speaking of, so The Wolf Road was your debut.
Yes.
How much had you written, and how long had you been writing sort of prior to The Wolf Road being signed and put out?
I mean, I'd been writing since I was a kid, but seriously, I started being like, I need to write novels and become a novelist when I was at university. So about 21, I was like, right, I'm going to write a novel, I'm going to finish it, and then I'm going to try and get it published. And obviously the first one was rubbish. But it was, you know, I don't even remember what it was about now. And then I was like, oh, that's not got anywhere, I'll write another one, and then another one. So I think I wrote 5 full novels in, wow, about 6 years. And then I wrote Wolf Road. And then that just went boom. So overnight success that took about eight years to do.
That's it, right? Yeah, overnight success does take many years to happen.
Oh yeah, completely.
But yeah, I think that's maybe on the higher end of the scale. But everyone, I think, so many people have to write 2 or 3, mm-hmm, sort of full length novels before they get it. And I think often people that don't have done it in a form where it's they've rewritten 1 or 2, yes, so many times that they've learned those skills.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's this old adage that you need to write 1 million words before you are ready to be published, and that's crap. But it's quite a useful, I suppose, benchmark. I think I probably got to about 500,000 before I got published. But it's, yeah, there are some writers that will rewrite the same book. And I fully respect that, but I get bored. And I feel like I don't want to go back and edit and edit and edit and edit. I'd rather just write something new.
Yeah. And you can always come back to the older ideas and then sort of rewrite them.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so you'd written 5 books before you wrote Wolf Road.
Mm.
I know that you've got another one on the way coming out.
2023. I put the wrong year on my Twitter profile.
Oh.
And then like, oh, hurriedly corrected it. No, you didn't. I just typo. No, it's because I because I also work in publishing, everything is a year ahead. So I'm already thinking it's 2023, but it's not. Okay. It's 2022. So yeah, it's coming out next year. I'm not quite sure when, probably early summer, late spring.
And it's called Children of the Sun, but no relation to Bitter Sun.
No. Okay. Well, there is a character that pops up briefly. Okay. So
okay,
more of an Easter egg than anything plot related.
Oh, okay. Sure. So 5, 6, 7, 8. Mm. This is the kind of the 9th story that you've written.
Well, I've also written another one.
Oh, okay.
Somewhere else. So
lots
there's
in the works.
One, yeah, I think we're on, I think that, yeah, that one must have been book 10. But oh, I wow. wrote Children of the Sun before I wrote Origins of Iris, and it sat for a while. So it's not always the next book that gets published.
Oh, that's interesting.
These two swapped around. So I wrote Children of the Sun before Iris and after Bitter Sun. It's all very confusing. It's been a very strange 5 years.
Right?
It really is, yeah.
That's interesting. So has Children of the Sun, did you write it and then go through all of these sort of developmental edits and kind of refining of that, or
well,
just draft?
There's a fun story about that. So when I got my first agent for Wolf Road and Bitter Sun, that was all great. And then I wrote Children of the Sun, which had a different name. So I'm always having to think about it was this new book, Children of the Sun. That was not quite working for my agent at the time. And we talked about it a lot. So I'd done a couple of rewrites on it and it still wasn't working. And then I was like, oh, you know what? I'm knackered. I've spent so many years just writing. I need a break. So I said to him that I'm going to take a break on this and I'm going to write something else. And so I just started writing The Origins of Iris, which was a kind of a passion book for me at the time, and I didn't really expect it to go anywhere. I just wanted to write something back in the woods, which is a bit of an odd thing. I just wanted to write something set in the wilderness again, because that's where my heart lies.
Yeah.
And then my agent didn't like it, which was hard, but I believed in the book very, very strongly. Mm-hmm. So I parted ways with my agent very amicably. And I found a new agent about 6 weeks after my daughter was born. And she sold Origins of Iris and Children of the Sun. So it was a bit of an odd back and forth journey between those two books.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's finding the right home and the right person to push them and to feel passionate about them. And the agent I have now is extremely passionate about this direction that I want to take my books in, a more speculative, weird, genre-defying route, which is really fun.
Yeah, that's great. A sort of two steps forward, one step back.
Yes.
Kind of thing. And your current agent is Jemima Forrester at Dennis
Harden,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
Amazing. So lots of books in the works and out, and we'll put some that might not ever see the light of day.
Yes.
Does it get easier the more you write?
The writing does, I think. Mm. For me in particular, it does get easier. The craft of it, that you get into a rhythm, you know how you work best when you've written so much. It does change. I don't know if you found that in your writing, that if something, the way that you worked 5 years ago is not the way you work now.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
It's weird, isn't it? It just, like, I used to never be able to write to music. Now I can't write without music. and it changes, but I feel confident now that I can start and finish a novel, that I don't have unfinished novels lying around.
You gain a self-efficacy of just doing something many times, you know that you will finish this novel, that it's not, I mean, whenever anyone writes their first novel, I think the greatest achievement is simply finishing it.
Yes, completely. And I think that if anybody is serious about wanting to be a professional published author, you can't do that with unfinished novels.
Yeah.
You need to be able to have the discipline to finish them. And I remember thinking to myself when I was like 21 in my uni digs, like, I need to finish this novel because I can't sell an unfinished novel.
Indeed. Well, the thing that one of my friends, Naomi, always says is you can't edit a blank page. Mm. So, you know, that's why people do the vomit draft, the first draft, just like put whatever you want on the page, because once you've got it, you can edit it.
Yes.
And yeah, really most books come together, I think, in the editing phase.
Oh, completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's also the most fun in a way, because it, well, depends who's giving, depends what the edits are, I suppose. Backtrack on that one. No, it is fun. I think when the edits, you agree with them and they work and it's like, oh yeah, this is going to be awesome. And this is really fun to be back in this world and with this character after a break. And, you know, it can be really fun.
Yeah. The thing I always hear that gets people really excited is when they meet their editor, or they just speak to their editor for the first time about a new book, and they get to talk to someone else about the world and the characters and the thing that's going on in the same sort of energy that it's going on in their heads.
Yeah. And it's magical, that part of it, really. Yeah. And then getting it all down and figuring out all what happens. And yeah, that's one of the best parts.
So you mentioned that as time's gone on, you've sort of changed the way you write the things like that. Do you have a kind of like a structure for when you come to write a new book, like a ritual or rituals that you follow now?
I tend to not plot anything, which probably shows, but I don't, I like discovering the story along with the character, which sounds really like pretentious, but you know, the characters just do their own thing and they kind of do. But I think I usually have a half a dozen ideas of what I want to write next and figure out which one is really sort of pulling at me, or which one is potentially the most commercial, or, you know, has the most structure to it.
Yeah.
And then I'll find an opening scene and I'll just start writing, and it'll be sitting in a cafe with a laptop, just plotting it out a little bit, you know, the first scene, the first act, and then going from there. I think I love a hero's journey. That's my favorite structure of anything, you know, the sort of classic hero's journey. And I do like Save the Cat as a plot structure.
Yeah,
that one's nice and easy. It's really easy to just be, oh yeah, no, you're right, that it does go there, and you know, can move it about. And I think I respect anyone who can sit down and plot out a whole novel, because I just don't know how to do that.
Yeah,
it's like, how do you know what happens?
Yeah, and then my friends who are plotters are like, how could you possibly not plot this? Are you insane?
I am friends with an awful lot of crime writers, and they have to plot. So it's, I'm like, I don't, they're like, oh, I've just done this outline for this new book and it's 30,000 words long. And I'm like, wow. I mean, but now you know what happens. So where's the fun in writing? But,
yeah. 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 I get that. But, I mean, very important question. Now that you do listen to music, what kind of music do you listen to when you're writing?
It depends on the story completely. It has to be instrumental.
Yeah.
I wrote one particular book where I listened to the, this is random, but the Hannibal movie soundtrack.
The sequel to Silence of the Lambs?
Yes.
Okay.
Not the best film in the world, let's be honest.
No, Silence of the Lambs.
Silence of the Lambs is brilliant, but yeah, you know, amazing. Yes, it's, Hannibal was fine.
Yeah.
But the soundtrack was really good because it was half set in Florence, so it had this very operatic soundtrack, and that really matched the vibe that I was going for with this book. With The Origins of Iris, it was a lot of soundtracks of The Leftovers And
is that Max Richter?
Yeah,
I listen to a lot of Max Richter.
He's just so good.
Yeah, and he really invokes like a feel, an emotion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Florian Christel is also a really good one for that, and Hans Zimmer for anything quite cinematic.
Hans Zimmer's, I think, in anyone who listens to instrumental music and writes at the same time, there's definitely at least one Hans Zimmer in their playlist.
Yeah, those are my go-tos.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. So before we move on to the other side of your work in publishing, I was looking at your bio on the Hachette website.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know, have you seen this bio?
I probably hope so.
She has traveled extensively throughout the world and has had close encounters with black bears, killer whales, and great white sharks.
Mm-hmm.
She has been at turns a bank cashier, fire performer, juggler, and is currently publishing manager at Rebellion. Is that all true?
Yep, 100%.
Gosh. What were you doing tackling whales and sharks and bears?
So I went on a couple of trips to Canada, which is what inspired a lot of Wolf Road. So Canada had a lot of bears, and I spent time in the wilderness in kayaking with killer whales and with you know, running away from black bears on beaches.
Gosh. Okay.
And then I spent about 6 weeks working in, after university, working in South Africa on a great white cage diving boat.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was very cool. Job. So did a lot of cage diving with great whites, and yeah, it was very cold, but it was pretty awesome.
That was
very
cold. It was pretty cold.
Yeah, they're very big fish.
So what about fire performer and juggler?
My misspent youth.
Doesn't sound misspent to me.
when I was between about 17 and about 22, 23, I was performing at a lot of festivals. I'm from Cornwall. We grew up a very hippie, strange upbringing, you know. I don't drink alcohol, so I was like, a lot of time was spent on beaches, around campfires.
Juggling,
I learned juggling with a bunch of other weird people who are still my friends today, and we went around performing at festivals and things like that.
So, well, that's awesome.
It was pretty fun.
I'm getting a glimpse into your origins of Iris, like living out in the woods and things like that, and I'm assuming a lot taken from your time spent running away from black bears.
Pretty much, yeah. There's not a bear in Iris, but there's lots of bears in Wolf Road, actually.
Oh, okay. So,
they're in there somewhere.
So there you go. It comes from personal experience.
Always. Write what you know.
Exactly. So outside of your own writing, you also work as publishing manager at a science fiction fantasy imprint.
Yes, I do. Publishing manager is a strange title, but I essentially run the day-to-day of a quite successful science fiction fantasy imprint of an Oxford-based publisher.
So what is the day-to-day in broad terms?
It varies, but I sign off on a lot of contracts, I check terms, I read submissions, or at least the first sort of 50 pages or so. I don't acquire, but I give my opinion.
Okay.
And I, you know, it's checking over covers, it's answering queries, it's a lot of people management. You know, I manage a team of a department of around 25 people, and we, you know, it's making sure everything's going to print on time and everything is looking good, and it is sort of quality control as well as budget, you know, low budgets, low budget control.
Sure.
You know, checking in on the marketing and the production and the everything, really.
So pretty eclectic, a sort of doing everything and making sure everything runs smoothly within the publishing.
Yes, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But you are involved in some way with the commissioning side of things.
Yes. So I don't actively acquire books. So I don't, agents don't send me, but I mean, sometimes they do, but I forward them on pleasantly. Okay. I don't actively acquire, but and acquisitions are always done on committee. You know, it's never just one voice, but I do often make my recommendation and have a sort of, I suppose, a casting vote on whether or not we would acquire a book or not, or how much we would offer, what kind of terms we would offer, what kind of rights we're looking for, how that fits into the wider publishing strategy, and how that impacts our scheduling for the next 2-3 years, you know.
Yes. Okay, so you're part of the larger committee, I presume, once an editor has decided that they like a submission, and then they pitch it to you and the rest of the committee.
Yes, essentially. An editor will receive a submission, they will read a chunk of it. If they like it, they will get second reads from other editors and other members of the team, like marketing especially. And then if they all like it, it comes to acquisitions meeting, which is every week. And then we talk about it. We look at the financials around it. We look at sales expectations, marketing budgets, you know, how pitchable this story is to retailers, to booksellers, and how we would place this, how we would publish this. So they're quite broad discussions. And then based on all of that, we decide whether or not it's a book that's right for us. You know, we have a criteria of what we want to publish, what kind of book it should be to fit our list.
And to fit the schedule, the upcoming schedule, presumably.
Yes, because we don't publish a huge number of books every year. You know, you get some of the big boys, they will publish, you know, hundreds of books a year, but we're more like sort of 40, 50. So, and we get an awful lot of submissions.
Yeah.
And have an awful lot of ongoing series and second books and things like that. So it sometimes is a bit of a juggling act, because if something is amazing and we love it, but the Americans are publishing it next spring, but we don't really have a slot, then we have to kind of, you know, jiggle things about. So that's what I do generally, is kind of jiggle things about to make it work.
Job description.
Yeah. That's what the job ad said when I applied.
Yeah, but that's really interesting. That's really good to know. And as someone with sort of such a great vantage point across the industry from both sides, what advice would you give to anybody aspiring to become a published author?
Oh, a published author. Finish your book, for one thing. That's key.
That's the baseline, I think.
Yeah, finish your book. Do not pitch to publishers. Find an agent. And I think there's a lot of advice out there that's like, create a platform. You know, people, there's this myth going around that publishers won't acquire an author if they don't have a huge Twitter following or a big Instagram following. And that's absolute crap. Like, that kind of thing doesn't matter. What matters is the book. So all you need to do is make sure that the book is as good as possible. And from a purely cynical point of view, that it has a really strong marketing hook and it sits really firmly in a popular genre. That's usually, you know, if something straddles three different genres, it's a really hard sell, to be perfectly frank.
Yeah. Especially for if it's a debut.
Yes. Yeah. Unless it has some outstanding literary element to it, because when you label something as literary fiction, it can kind of get away with anything. But even then, it has its own rules. But I think having something sit firmly in one or two genres and making sure it's got this nice big marketable hook to it, you know, I think is really important.
Yeah,
and
great
because
advice.
You need to pitch it to a few different people. You know, you need to pitch it to an agent, and then the agent needs to use that to pitch it to a publisher, and then the publisher needs to use that to pitch it to booksellers, and then the booksellers need to use that to pitch it to readers. So that pitch has to be so strong that it carries all the way through that.
Yeah.
That process.
And as you mentioned before, the marketing department are involved in that pitch. So if I'm sure many great kind of pitches and things get shot down because the marketing department turns around and says, well, we don't know where to place this. It doesn't really fit in the market.
Yep, absolutely. And it's one of those very sad truths about publishing is that it is a business. And if the people who are selling the book, marketing and sales, don't think that it is sellable, it doesn't really matter how amazing the book is or how much the editor loves it, because if they're not going to sell it, then it's not a viable option.
Yes.
It's heartbreaking. But
it doesn't make sense for a business to put out the greatest book of all time if nobody's going to read it.
Yes. Indeed. Because if marketing then don't think that it's got legs, it won't get a budget behind it, which means it won't be pushed, which means readers won't be able to find it. So it's a horrible vicious circle sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's, alas, the way we are at the moment.
Indeed. Well, that's really, really good advice. And that also ties into a lot of stuff that I've spoken with lots of agents who have been on the podcast and have said, when you are, and this is as early on as the submitting to agents phase, it's like research your genre, research the market, and make sure that's in your submission.
Yes. A lot of agents now ask for comparative titles.
Yeah.
My favorite way to pitch that kind of thing is to find two touchstones that are sort of opposing but make an interesting combination. So with Origins of Iris, it was, I pitched it to my agent as Wild meets Sliding Doors. And that has carried through. That's on the Amazon listings now for it. And that is instantly kind of, okay, that conjures up a certain feeling and a certain tone and genre to everybody who sees it.
But be thoughtful.
Obviously, if you like
be
those things.
With the comps.
Oh, completely. Completely. It's not Lord of the Rings meets the other best-selling massive book. That's probably a safe bet as well. Don't comp your title to the biggest bestseller in the world, and don't comp it to Gone Girl.
Oh, is that one that just always gets comped?
It is. Well, it's like for readers of Gone Girl. If you were a fan of Gone Girl, if you liked Gone Girl, it's like, oh, it's become this.
The one I hear from agents is people always submitting and comparing themselves to Stephen King.
Yeah. Don't do that. Don't be like, this is like Harry Potter. because we get a lot of science fiction and fantasy submissions. We get an awful lot right now of Gideon the Ninth. It's Gideon the Ninth meets this. It's Gideon the Ninth meets that. And I'm like, I haven't read that. So that means very little to me. So that's why I quite like using movies.
Yeah. The good thing about movies as a cultural touchstone is that even if you haven't seen it, you've seen the trailer, so you understand the concept. In terms of a comp pitch, it doesn't really matter if someone hasn't seen the movie if they've seen the trailer.
Exactly. And it also kind of says that your book is a little bit cinematic, which... is always nice.
Because then there's a potential movie rights involved and this stuff.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Business. Well, that brings us on to the final question, which, as always, is, Beth, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book would you take?
Do you know what? When you told me about this question, the first thing that popped into my head was, because I've written a book about survival stuff, was, the SAS Survival Guide, because that would be incredibly practical. But then I was like, no, that's not the tone of the question.
It could be. You can talk the tone however you want.
I would probably take Cloud Atlas with me, mainly because it has pretty much every genre in it, so I would probably never get bored, and it's actually one of my favorite books of all time. I think it's the book that taught me that I could write what I wanted to write, and I could mix genres and I could play around in it. I didn't have to stick to one stable, and it's very, very long as well, so it would keep me quite busy.
Yeah, Yeah, it definitely has. There's so much in it and there's so much variety.
And there's so many layers to it. And every time you read it, there's something a little bit new. Yeah. And it's, yeah, it's one of the best books, I think.
But it's a great choice.
Objectively, one of
objectively,
the best books.
You heard it here first, guys.
Yeah, it is. And even the film's pretty good as well.
Yeah, complicated. Yeah. But it's, yeah. I mean, a perfect book for the desert island situation.
Thank you.
Great choice. Well, thank you so much, Beth. Thanks for coming on and sharing your experience with writing and your work in the industry and telling us a bit about how it all works behind the scenes. It's been really interesting.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to talk.
And for anyone looking to keep up with everything that Beth is doing, you can follow her on Twitter at Beth K. Lewis, on Instagram at bethlewis.author, or you can head over to her website, bethlewis.co.uk, to get all of it in one place. To make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow us on Twitter at Right and Wrong UK, on Instagram at Right and Wrong Podcast. Thanks again, Beth, for coming on, and thanks to everybody for listening. We will catch you in the next episode. Thanks for hanging around until the end. If you're interested in starting your own podcast but aren't really sure what that looks like, I can't recommend Zencastr enough. It's so simple to host, record, and download your podcast with, and it even has a built-in transcription AI. It functions entirely in the internet browser, which means all your guests have to do is click on a link and they'll be brought into the conversation. If you click on the link in the description, you'll get 30% off the first 3 months. All you have to do is click on the link in the description. Thanks again for supporting the show, and we'll see you in the next episode.